Welcome to the Outsource Accelerator podcast. This is a short format podcast where we explore business and outsourcing mastery. My name is Derek Gallimore, and I am really excited to bring you the leading podcast in outsourcing. This podcast is brought to you by Outsource Accelerator. We are the world's leading outsourcing marketplace and advisory. We help big and small businesses with their outsourcing needs, and we can help you too. We cover everything from business and staffing strategy, optimal outsourcing structures, implementations, and fully managed services. If you're already outsourcing, about to start, or somewhere in between, then we can ensure that you get the best from outsourcing. That's the best prices, best terms, and of course, the best results from your outsourcing practices. We list over 700 outsourcing suppliers on our website, host this leading outsourcing podcast, and have over 5,000 pages of content. Because we span the entire market, we can ensure that you get the best deal possible. We offer everything from light brokerage, co-managed services, through to fully managed solutions. Get in touch today. Visit us at outsourceaccelerator.com/quote. Mention that you're a podcast listener, and we will give you special attention plus a 10% discount. This is for a limited time only. Go to outsourceaccelerator.com/quote. Hi, and welcome back. This is episode 251. Today, we are being joined by Jethro Marks of thenile.com.au, which is an online retailer based in Australia and New Zealand. Jethro has a wealth of experience, both in business, but now also outsourcing. He's been outsourcing to the Philippines for nearly 6 years, I believe. So there's a lot of knowledge, a lot of learnings, a lot of experience that he's had with outsourcing and in the evolution of finding an outsourcing partner and building his team here. So I've really enjoyed my conversation with Jethro and learnt a lot, and I hope you do too. If you want any of the show notes, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/251. Hi, and welcome back, everybody. Today, we are joined by Jethro Marks, the founder and CEO of nile.com.au, which is, in some ways, very similar to amazon.com. I'm not sure if you appreciate necessarily that comparison all the time, Jethro, but it's great to have you on board. The reason why I've got you on this podcast is to discuss. You've got vast experience in business. I think you literally almost started this business while you were still a child, and you've been running it many decades now, and you've also incorporated outsourcing into that business model relatively early on. So it's an absolute pleasure to have you on this podcast, and thanks for your time. So first of all, Jethro, I suppose you can introduce yourself far better than I. Can you just give a brief summary of the Nile and how it came to be?
Sure. Well, thank you very much for having me on today. This is great fun. So we started the business in 2003 in New Zealand, in Auckland. And the background on it is that I'd come back from a backpacking trip. I'd been traveling around South America for about 8 months and arrived back with the need to either get a job or just start a business. And I thought, all right, we'll just start a business and see what happens. And if that doesn't work out, then I can always still go get a job. And so I got together with a couple of guys I'd worked with a couple of years before that. And we started up a business with a very sophisticated business model and business plan, which was to find anything that we could fit that would fit into a box that someone would buy on the internet that we could ship to them and hopefully make a bit of money doing that. And cool.
But having said that, that was pretty sophisticated and back in 2003, yeah? No one was – the internet was in its super early days back then.
Yeah, so 2003 was sort of a couple of years after the collapse of all the dot-coms. E-commerce had gone from becoming sort of something that in the late 90s was going to take over the world to something that nobody really talked about. It was pre-SaaS, pre-cloud. It was there really just wasn't much going on. And so we got into it. And, at the time, there weren't any of the tools that are available today. And You know, there was no Shopify, and there was no almost all the things that today as an e-commerce entrepreneur, if you were going to sit out and use all the various things, none of that existed. So we had to build all our own technology from scratch and literally build a business off, you know, without any kind of infrastructure around us. When I look back at the way we had to do it and the way we did it versus the way I would do it today, it's just totally different, because today there's so much available that would make your life so much easier and to be able to scale a lot faster.
It really is hard, isn't it? When I was setting up one of my previous businesses in about 2010, I needed online payments. And it was just a minefield trying to find providers, trying to find payment gateways that would enable you to use cards, and trying to negotiate not paying $250,000 deposit bond. It's just a minefield, and that's just for online payments. I mean, everything now is just plug and play, isn't it?
Absolutely, and I feel your pain entirely on the payments. I think when we first set out, all the domestic banks wouldn't touch us with a barge pole. And we were required to go and deal with a Singapore-based UK entity that agreed to take us on, and they processed payments and paid us out 6 weeks later. We had to wait 6 weeks to get payments. Wow. And I remember going to then renegotiate with them after several months, saying, "Look, you know, we're an established company now. We've shown that we can do the, you know, all our metrics are good. Can we get an improvement on? We've decided that you guys have obviously done very well, and we'd like to reward you. We're going to make it a 5 week turnaround time now instead of six."
Crazy. Yeah, huge. And you were having to pay for your stock in advance, or you could manage the cash flows?
No, we were quite lucky in that regard. I think we managed to buy some of the stock on credit at the time with some of the companies that were a little bit more opening. But it was tough. I mean, it's really tough in the beginning. There's never enough cash around when you're first starting up. And it was just one of those things. Eventually, I think we managed to find a bank that would, after several years, a couple of years later, that was prepared to deal with us once we'd sort of got a bit more traction. And then we're amazed that they could turn it around and get it down to 1 week, and then eventually next day. And that was just quite eye opening that such a thing was possible at the time.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Like, you know, it's hard when you're too early into a market and you're a market leader, because everything just has so much friction associated with it, doesn't it? I suppose the alternative to that is when you're no longer a market leader and there's no barriers to entry, then you've got a lot of competition. So maybe there isn't, maybe there's a sweet spot there somewhere.
Yeah, it's a really good point. And today we were just discussing this about how, today it would be easier, and we've had to iterate and change the model to stay ahead of the curve, because we developed some technology, in one area, and we'd all of a sudden have a real lead on our competitors. You fast forward 12 months and everyone's got the same product, and they've all developed it, or they've managed to get a SaaS product that does the same thing. So there's that constant need to kind of stay ahead. I think in the beginning, certainly the problem is that the perception of risk on the part of every supplier is really high. So they sort of look at you and go, you're an unstable entity, and therefore we can't give you whatever credit or whatever it is that you need at the time. And the irony being that that's probably when you need it the most, because you're in formative stage of your journey and you haven't yet built momentum. But I guess just a constant state of perseverance and just kind of knuckling down and making sure that you keep focused on those things that are important, like cash flow, for example, and then it all kind of starts to work itself out.
Yeah, and it's this constant need to stay ahead of the curve, which is really why I want to get you on this podcast and discuss, because, I think the internet sector, they're renowned for being a little bit cutting edge in terms of everything. The sort of older industries, older businesses, generally they're not so agile as the younger, newer industries and players such as yourselves. And one of those ways that you certainly stayed ahead of the curve was to outsource some of your staffing. Do you just want to, I suppose, before we get into the hardcore outsourcing, what was your journey like in terms of your staffing journey and, the decisions that led you to explore outsourcing?
Sure. So, we've had offices both in New Zealand and in Australia since day one or shortly afterwards. And, for those of your listeners who aren't familiar with these markets, I mean, we've got relatively small populations, 20, 24 million across the region, and relatively high labor costs. And what we found During the startup phases, we had difficulty being able to hire people because the economies were quite vibrant. But we weren't ready at that point because to do anything because we just hadn't formed enough of our own business processes. Then we had the start of the GFC or the financial crisis, and I think that kind of changed the calculus a little bit because there was all of a sudden some higher unemployment. We were able to hire people more easily. And then as the economies kind of recovered, it's around 2011, 2012, what we found was that we were back into the same state of not being able to hire people. There just weren't, it was real heavy competition to try and recruit staff. In a lot of the roles that we needed to fill, for example, like customer care or some of the back office roles, they weren't perceived to be career type moves. We were just picking up people who were picking up transitory work. And so you had this kind of situation where we weren't able to get the people that we wanted. The people that we were able to get didn't stay with us very long. It just was that there was a lot of factors that basically said we potentially weren't playing the game correctly. And I think at that point we started to seriously look at, well, what other market could we potentially go to start hiring a highly qualified group of people who were very well motivated and potentially would allow us to save on the cost of that hiring. And I think you were actually very instrumental at the time. I think at the time you were running a business and you were very instrumental in giving me some insights into how you had structured yourself. And as a consequence, we took that journey to go and look abroad and see where we could look at. And we looked at a few markets. Initially, we looked at India, we looked at the Philippines, we looked at some other Asian markets, and we eventually discounted all of them except for the Philippines. Either by proximity or lack of proximity or time zone or whatever. So just it worked out really well for us because it was a market which time zone-wise was on the same as Perth, was only about 2 to 3 hours out of Sydney. Mm. Very large English-speaking population. We had a number of contacts and friends who had built decent operations up there. And so we just felt that there was a strong push to try and assess whether that market would work for us. And I think it was in about 2011, 2012, around then that we first went up and started to do our research and understand what the Philippine recruitment market was like and what hiring staff was there and what the entire experience of outsourcing would have been like. I think it took us about 6 months to kind of get comfortable both with the providers and just understanding how it was organized and pull the trigger. Early 2013, we put a few people up on the ground there to just see what it would be like.
Go on. I mean, it's amazing. And you know, what were, before you pulled the triggers, what were your major fears? What really held you back?
I think the biggest constraint I was worried about was operating at, we'd operated remotely with multiple offices up until that point, but I hadn't done it out of our comfort zone. And so I wasn't really sure, you know, with, even though it's a relatively short distance to the Philippines, like 9 hours from Sydney, 8 hours from Sydney, it's still, it just felt like it was quite far away, and we just hadn't had enough experience or comfort factor with being able to do it. And so we weren't sure where we're going to have management issues, where we're going to have, where we're going to be able to hire the right people. We just weren't sure how the structures worked. It was just a lack of understanding on our part. And I think the best thing I did beyond talking to some other people who had operations there already was to get on a plane and just go and meet with all the different providers that we'd shortlisted by that point and just get a really solid understanding of how their businesses worked, who they were as people, what their journeys had been, why they'd done what they'd done, and look at the kind of operations that they were running, meet firsthand some of the people who would later become our employees. And I think once we'd done that, we really got a much better comfort factor around what it would be like to go ahead and do this.
And again, you know, you're talking, it's only 8 years ago, but things have come so far in that time, haven't they? I mean, you just need to look at, like, kind of Facebook only just really started about 8 or 9 years ago. Similarly, outsourcing has been around for 25 years, but 8 or 9 years ago, it wasn't quite so accessible. It wasn't as easy to navigate, and there was nothing like Outsource Accelerator, of course. But, you know, was it relatively early stage when you compare the market now? In terms of how you explored and how you did DD on this process?
It's just the amount of adoption from a lot of new people into using the services up there. I think that we got in 5-6 years ago and started building our teams, and I think actually, to answer the question better, I think the one thing that really blew me away when I first went up and started looking at options were the sheer scale of opportunities that other people had done in terms of what roles they'd outsourced, where the growth was coming from. I got a sense when I first went up, I thought, oh, it'll just be, you know, offices after offices just of call centers and just people answering phones from customer care. And I think I didn't realize the sheer volume of different roles that have actually been outsourced into places like the Philippines. Mm-hmm. And with that came this kind of sense of, well, actually, we came here to do one thing, but there's a whole bunch of opportunity that we could do within our business and roles that we could create that don't exist anymore and skills that we could bring in that we had never thought to do so before, just because I hadn't got my head around the fact that that existed in other parts of the world. And that was really quite exciting. And so, you know, one of the things that I've liked is that we've been able to experiment at a much lower cost than we could in Australia or even in New Zealand, where we can onboard people, put them into roles. If it works out, great. If it doesn't, then we can move on to the next thing. And with that has come the creation of a lot of jobs and a lot of group people within our teams who, you know, we've never thought about those roles prior to going to the Philippines. And that's been really beneficial to our business. And obviously, we've brought on some amazing talent who we're very happy with.
And that's the real magic of outsourcing, isn't it? You know, sure, you can get your customer support done. You know, you can save a bit of money. But the real magic is seeing the vast opportunities here, because you have cheaper access to abundant resources. And that's anything from web design to creative to launching rockets to doing whatever you need. And it's an incredible competitive advantage when you realize, I think, that you can almost run the whole structure from the Philippines and, you know, go five steps ahead of your competition. And, you know, it really takes kind of a couple of years of outsourcing to really grasp that. Or, you know, I think you can really speed that up if you just come over here and have a look. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think, you know, we started off with the view that this was going to be an outsourced function. And I think very quickly we changed our entire approach and said, this is no longer an outsourced function. This is simply one of our offices that happens to be in another country. Mm. You know, we started with 3 people, and I think we scaled that to about 25 in under a year. It was just once we had got a sense of comfort, and that came very quickly, I think within about 3 months, once we got a sense of comfort and we decided that this was going to work, then it was just about doubling down and tripling down on that investment and making sure that we got it right. And to that end, making sure that the culture of the operation there was consistent with the culture that we were running in Australia. We'd run a separate office before where we hadn't done enough work on that regard, and we'd sort of treated that office as being somewhat separate to us. And this time around, we changed it around and we said from day one, they will be a part of our company, and it will be absolutely first and foremost in their minds that they are employees of ours, even if they're employed by an outsourcer. Mm. And that was instrumental, I think, in making this a successful venture, because it just means that it even permeates the language of our staff here in Australia, where they don't think of it as just being some other company who's doing something for us. It's not a service provider. It's our people who are doing stuff. And, you know, if they do things well, then we all celebrate. And if it's not being done well, then we all work to try and, you know, assess and fix whatever the problems are. Mm-hmm. But it's not, you know, and we can talk at some point about the full journey we've gone to try and achieve that outcome. But I think that was really a design decision on day one, once we'd made that call, to make sure that was the approach that we took. And we never wanted the staff at any point to feel like they were just an outsourced provider. We wanted them from day one to think that they were our company, and they just happened to have a different company paying their signing their checks.
Yeah, I think there's a high correlation with success and that mindset shift, isn't there? Because, you know, if you look at it as a spectrum, the worst end of outsourcing is that the employers really just kind of don't even realize that there's a person behind the computer screen, and they're just engaging with the computer screen, setting deliverables and having them delivered, you know. And it's the low end of functionality and output in terms of outsourcing. The high end is when you reach this almost you know, altruistic state of really just running an operation as your employees. And it's so simple to say, but they're just your employees, but sitting in a different destination. And then you really see the opportunities really open in front of you. But again, I think it's hard for people that haven't necessarily done it to grasp that. You know, if they're not sitting in your office, if they're in a different country, they, you know, when they're at home, they speak a different language. How are they part of our team? That's a sort of them and us thing, isn't it? But once you work with them, you realize, you know, they're people. They all have their own careers, their own career aspirations, their families, you know, and they want to be a part of a company and a culture and enjoy their days at work. And it's no more complex than that, really, is it?
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, when we look at it, if I believe that our team in the Philippines is are much stronger brand champions of our brand and the culture and the values, and they've embraced it even to a higher degree than, let's say, our Australian team have. Not that our Australian team are; it's just it doesn't form a part of the daily vernacular, and there's a lot more usage of the brand and the logo and the just generally a lot more of the emblems and the symbols within that Philippine office, and they've absolutely live and breathe as though they're part of that brand. And I think that's amazing, because this is a team that doesn't even, you know, it's an Australian company that services an Australian audience, and here's a group of people far away who are living and breathing that from morning to night. And it's quite awesome to see and to feel, because they've embraced it. And to your point, you know, they're all well-motivated individuals. They're all educated. This is a conscious decision for them to come and work with us. And some of the tenure of those staff, some of the staff have been with us since day one. And we really, you know, that I think there's something quite special and quite important about that. And it's part of the competitive edge that we hope to get and to keep, is to maintain the culture and be able to do it internationally.
Mm. So outsourcing is you've been outsourcing now for 5 or 6 years, and, you know, I preach to people that it really can be an absolute game changer. It can transform your business, and it's really not as hard as you think. You know, the only real obstacle is just getting started and iterating from there. But, you know, I'm sure you can attest that it's not all a holiday. It's not all easy sailing. It's not plain sailing. There's a lot of hurdles between starting and finishing, if you ever do finish. Can you, you know, give us some insight into your journey over the last 5 or 6 years, what you've changed, what you've learned, what you've iterated?
Yeah, so the biggest challenge that we faced on day one was that at the time that we moved up to the Philippines, there was very little documented process within our business. We had processes, but for the most part, employees were taught largely just through socialization and through oral law by being around other members of the team as to how things got done, which in itself was not a good outcome. I don't think we'd put enough thought into it at the time. And what we discovered by transplanting into the Philippines was that we couldn't do that at all. Even though we had put staff from New Zealand into the Philippines, it just wasn't enough to have individuals trying to teach new team members on a regular basis. And one of the biggest benefits that we got, even though it created the most amount of work for us up front, was the requirement to then document all of our processes from start to finish. And at that point, we were probably already 10 years into the business. So there was a lot of specific ways of doing things that we just had never, you know, sat down and documented sufficiently and kept a proper log of. Mm. So it required us to do a full audit of all those processes and then to document them. And really interestingly, I think we came out a much better company as a consequence of that, just by virtue of the fact that we were required to actually document what we were doing. With that, once we had that in place, we were in a much better position to set expectations and operate the teams that we had set up there. One thing that the Philippines does slightly differently to the way things would be done here is that there is just a much more stringent approach to process. Everything needs to be documented and run according to process.
Mm. If you go an extension to process mapping, then how does that extend into actually the organization and the kind of mapping of people's roles and, you know, the general maturation of the company?
Yeah, so I guess once we completed the process mapping within the business, the next step was to try and get much stronger job definitions and KPIs around individuals' roles. We had a very loose structure before going into the Philippines, and once we went in, we were able to, over the period of years, develop a much more stringent structure that was along lines, what would be called lines of business or departments or just areas, actual functional outcomes. And it was what we have found is, and this has sort of been an ongoing discovery, well, it certainly wasn't on day one, is that as we have become much more defined in the outcomes of a particular task or a particular role, the outcomes have always been substantively better. One of the things that we were notoriously bad at, and until very recently, is about giving people too many different tasks and too many different jobs. And the upshot of this ongoing process of sort of creating much more delineated roles has been that we were able to strip back a lot of those superfluous parts of people's jobs and just get them to focus in on whatever it is that we really want them to focus in on. And I think, again, by being in the Philippines, this has really been an absolute requirement, because this is A, how the industries are structured, how the organizations are structured, and how people expect to work. And so it's made us a much better company, I think, as we've been able to kind of focus in on specific outcomes that we're looking for, task people accordingly, and then both monitor and reward accordingly to that as well.
And where is the balance there with a, you know, very fast changing, let's say, high growth business within a fast changing sector? Where is the balance there and the sort of the risk of investing a lot into building processes that then have to be scrapped or rebuilt in 3 to 12 months?
So I think where it actually makes it easier. I know that sounds a bit counterintuitive, but I'll explain it a bit further. Because we've got more documentation and more structure and more understanding of the consistent outcomes that we're seeking across the business, when a requirement is there, when there is a requirement to make a change, be it a minor alteration or whether it be a total 180 on whatever we were doing before, there is a process in place with the infrastructure around it to be able to take people on the journey of moving from whatever they were doing to wherever we need to take them. So there's no real requirement for very stringent change management. We just say, guys, yesterday we were doing it this way, moving forward will be this, here's the documentation to support it, we're going to run some training, and here are the people who are going to be helping you along the way, and then moving forward, this is the way we're going to go forward. Once you've kind of got into the mindset, or once we've gotten into the mindset of doing that and having the right people in place to assist us to make that happen on a regular basis, it gives us a lot more flexibility, because in a situation where we didn't have documented processes and we wanted to make a change, it could be done quickly, but you wouldn't necessarily get the consistency that you were looking for. And it took a long time to bed in, and people tended to sort of err back to the original process or way of doing things instead of transforming to the new way. Now, there's an actual process for changing process. So it sounds like a verbose way of doing things, but I actually think it's much easier. And it's one of these things that if the routines are set correctly and people can be, there's a way of being able to alter them, then it gives us a lot more flexibility to do things as and when required, rather than being tied into any one particular way of doing things that is then a huge hassle to change, and we don't always get 100% buy-in to make those changes.
Yeah, absolutely. And what are some of the upsides to outsourcing then? You know, we all sort of wax lyrically about the kind of moonshots that we can do when we have the access to more abundant resource. But what are some of the things, if they're not confidential or secret, that you have managed to do within your business that you don't think would have been achievable back in Australasia?
So one of the biggest bottlenecks we have in the business is we just never have enough IT resource to be able to do all the things we want to do. And so there is a level of prioritization that we need to put towards projects to be able to get that done. And what we've found by having the ability to be able to tap resource as and when required, certainly with more specialist skills or just the ability to put on people to do a specific job that would otherwise be financially unfeasible in Australia, is we can get people doing a job which ultimately one day will be automated once our IT team can get around to it or can be moved on to it. But allows us to be able to build processes or build functions, get them done on a regular basis, assess the viability as to whether we want them done, trial, test, improve, document, and get it to a point where it can eventually be handed over to a developer who can then basically take the template that says this is exactly how the process is done and then code it up. And it's we've done it inadvertently a few times to the point where I almost feel that that is the way forward, where instead of devoting IT resource up front to doing any automation, we would first get people doing it in our teams in Manila just to be able to prove whether it is actually something we want to be doing ongoing. Because the whole test and learn process is a lot cheaper if we can just be if we can get people doing it rather than having to devote the limited amount of IT resource that we've got to being able to code and then having to uncode and recode and iterate and alterate, whereas they could be moving on to a bunch of other stuff in that period. And so
yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? It's that MVP approach, really, isn't it? Just kind of testing the pathway before you build it out.
Absolutely. And we initially set out to do it this way, but we just found, well, hang on a sec, we've got this thing, could we get it? We haven't got IT resource to do it. Let's just give it to a couple of guys here. Let's build a process around it, build a team around it. And then we find on day one, you know, we have, you know, in typical MVP, it's not what you want. It's just what we put out, and then we iterate and iterate until eventually we get to a point where the function can be handed over. What it's also done is bring down the development cost of from our IT team, because by the time they get given the work to be done, it's already been well battle tested and is ready to go. So there's not a lot of creative thinking required to try and figure out problems. We've already assessed the problems, we've dealt with them, we found solutions, and now we're on to implementation.
Fantastic. And what are some of the hardest things you've found to bring over to outsourcing? Obviously, if you're dealing with plumbers, you can't get your outsourced staff to go and be the plumbers. But what are some of the stickier things that there's more friction to outsourcing that you've found?
I think despite the fact that we have the cultural alignment, and despite the fact that we have a lot of communication, I think the one bit that we still haven't quite figured out is how to bridge the gap, the tyranny of distance, where if I have two people in a room sitting next to each other or in two rooms alongside each other, they can just have infinite number of very short conversations face to face and identify and solve problems a lot faster. We just haven't figured out a way to make that work as efficiently between the different offices. And I don't think that's specifically an outsourcing problem. It could be just any kind of distance problem. But from our perspective, the bonds that people seem to develop within our teams once they're sitting alongside each other just seem to be that much stronger, that much faster. I think especially in the Philippines, one of the things that's is quite a big cultural difference is the social aspect, where people often go to work to be amongst their friends or their colleagues who they consider to be their friends. And that can almost be the main priority for why they've got a particular job or they take a particular job. Whereas in the West, you know, it's certainly the career first, and then, you know, if you happen to be working with nice people, that's a nice thing, but that wouldn't be the reason that you would stay and leave a job generally. And so I feel like to remove that component almost takes away one of the biggest draw cards to bringing in the best staff. You know, we took the view that we went to the Philippines, and as a result of that, we were able to drop our costs quite substantially. So while we're there, we're going to have nice offices in the nicest area and just try and look after the people as best as we can, because the incremental additional cost of doing that is pretty marginal, but the benefit that we get is enormous versus the benefit that we get just by being in the Philippines in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a very good point, isn't it? You know, it's the savings are already so big that you don't really want to kind of save every penny you can when you're already saving 70%. It's better to go kind of mid-scale, provide good facilities, get good candidates, good employees, provide a good environment where there's a great culture, and they can really sort of, you know, bat for your company, and then that's really the sweet spot in terms of cost and productivity and results, I think, isn't it?
Absolutely. Again, maybe it's just a philosophical issue, but I 100% believe it. Like, it's proven itself time and time again, and yeah, we're a firm advocate.
Absolutely. Jethro, it's been amazing, and thank you so much. And of course, if anyone wants to go and check out your company, it is thenile.com.au. Is that right? Do you have the .com?
Absolutely.
As well?
That's right.
Absolutely. So thank you so much for being on board with us today. And I want to get you back again so we can talk more broadly about outsourcing. So I look forward to that conversation.
Likewise. Thank you so much for having me on.
Okay, that was Jethro Marks of thenile.com.au. If you want to get in touch with Jethro or know anything about this episode, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/251. And as always, if you want to ask us anything, then just drop us an email to ask@outsourceaccelerator.com.